Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, July 10th, 2016. This is episode 1304. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and, you know, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality headgear, Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go. Is it gone yet? Pokemon can keep going. Is it gone? Is it over? Because, boy, it was the biggest thing in for 3 days ever. Have you played Pokemon Go yet? If you haven't, don't, because it's over now, and we're going to move on to something else. It's kind of the Flappy Bird of this year. Flappy Bird was like a thing, wasn't it? Everybody in the, and you know where you see it go crazy is in colleges. Everybody downloads the app because in colleges people are living together, and so it's, you know, the stuff spreads like wildfire. You know, they're all talking all the time. And have you seen Flappy Bird? Oh man, dude, it's cool. Oh, you gotta try this. What's your high score? 300. Oh man, that's good. That kind of thing. And then people get tired of it pretty quick. Before that happened, so there's 800 Flappy Bird clones. The sad thing is the guy who made Flappy Bird yanked it because he was worried people were overly obsessed with it. Even though he's making money, it was just a kid from Vietnam. He yanked it. He said, nah, never mind. What didn't happen was all the clones didn't get. In fact, they're still polluting the ecosystem. There's Flappy Bird clones. You see them all the time now still. I don't know if this is going to happen with Pokemon Go or not. Have you? So, came out Wednesday. That's how fresh this fad is. Sizzling hot, right off the fad grill. And it came from the company Niantic that did a game called Ingress. It was very similar. What's interesting is this company, Niantic, used to be a Google company. Before that, it was a company Google acquired called Keyhole. And they did satellite mapping technology. They didn't do games. In fact, Google bought them for the maps so they could have those great satellite images, you know, when you go from the mappy look to the satellite. That's Keyhole stuff. But the guys, the engineers there said, hey, we got this idea, Google. We'd like to do an app. First, they did an app called Field Trip that was kind of neat but annoying. At the same time, you carry it in your pocket, and as whenever you walked by a point of interest, you know, a famous person was born or died or a movie was made or whatever, it would say, oh, on your left, the White House, that's where they made the movie Inventing the Abbots. And you went, I really don't care. And I guess if you're in a city or you're somewhere, like you're walking around Paris, that'd be kind of cool. Anyway, I don't think Field Trip was a huge success. Then they did a game based on mapping technology called Ingress. Very popular with the geekies. But, again, not, you know, among the rest of the world, it was kind of baffling. It also made you look weird because the way Ingress worked, you'd walk around town looking for, well, there would be points of interest, you know, City Hall, the post office, a church. But you would have to stand in front of it with your smartphone out, basically hacking it, doing weird things. It looked kind of creepy, right? You're doing weird things, and then you would take it over, and your faction would own it. It was all virtual. You weren't doing anything really, but it looked kind of. Anyway, I think that's probably one of the reasons it didn't take off. That, and it took a lot of walking, which geeks are not known for. So then Wednesday, they released a game they'd been working on for some time called Pokemon Go. It's based on the old remember Pokemon card game, the card game with Pikachu, the electric fuzzball. They had hundreds of different fuzzballs. It's Japanese. It's, you know, it's weird. It was just weird. And the game was you would capture them and you would train them up and then you would fight them in the Pokemon gym. But it was really – what it really was is a card game. It was actually a good card game. And the reason I know all this, my kid – both kids, I think, played it because it was very big about 10 years ago. And, you know, there were game versions and all, you know, video game versions and stuff. Anyway, this game Pokemon Go, on Saturday night, Friday and Saturday night, you couldn't go to a college campus without seeing two things happening on. Big protests, Black Lives Matter protests, I understand, very serious, heavy stuff. And then a bunch of guys going around with their smartphones looking for Pokemon. It was a very strange juxtaposition. And maybe it was something maybe we needed some psychological relief after a really depressing, horrible, no good, very bad week. But just everybody was doing it. I was doing it. We were wandering around. Even in this little town that we're in, this town of 55,000 people, Petaluma, California, you couldn't go 5 feet without seeing somebody, and you'd go, Pokemon Go? Pokemon Go, yeah. Red team? Blue team? Get out of here. I hate you. I'm a yellow team. That kind of thing. There's three teams. You join a team. You find Pokemon. You throw little Pokeballs at them. It's kind of cool. Okay, see, now it's coming back. I kind of like it again. It's kind of cool because it's augmented reality. So it uses the camera on your phone and the GPS. So as you're walking around, you're looking at a map. Remember, this came from Keyhole, the mapping guys. You're looking at a map, and you'll see Pokemon gyms, only this time it's points of interest. Like across the street, there's a mural. There's a theater across the street. It's not the theater. It's the mural on the wall of the theater is a Pokemon gym, which, by the way, the blue team has, and it's making me mad because I'm a red team. Team Valor! Anyway, some one of these days we're gonna attack it en masse. Got to get you too, Kim. You got to go Team Red, okay? Everybody, Team Red. We're gonna get that wall. It's gonna be so you harvest Pokemon as you walk around, and the augmented reality is not you when the Pokemon appears, you see it in a view of what you're looking at. So if you're at a restaurant, it's sitting on your table. If you're walking down the street, it's in the middle of the street. This, by the way, a hazard. And they warn you, and I bet you we're going to see news stories of people wandering into the middle of busy streets completely oblivious because they see a Pokemon sitting there, except it's not really there. It's on your phone. So you throw the Pokeball at it. Remember, it's Japanese. It's just – there's a certain surreal streak in Japanese games. It's a little surreal. You throw this ball at it, and if it hits it, thunk, right on the head, then it gets captured in the ball. It's kind of like a Ghostbusters thing. It goes – and then it tries to get out. And if it doesn't get out, you own it. And then you could train it up. You can evolve it. You can feed it Pokemon candy. You can get it bigger and bigger. And eventually you have a whole stable of Pokemon that you can then use to go take over points of interest by having Pokemon battles. So it's – but okay, here's the two things I do like about it. One, it gets you out of your house. I told my son, my 21-year-old, about it. Because he played Pokemon as a kid. I said, oh, you're going to love this. He said, what is it? It's just a plan to get a bunch of nerds out of their mom's basement. I said, well, not that there's anything wrong with that. He's a bro. He doesn't, you know, nerds. The other thing that's cool. So that's good. You're walking around. I've walked. In fact, I can look on my Pokemon. It tells you how far you've walked. I think I've walked 15 kilometers searching for Pokies. That's pretty good, right? 2 or 3 days. The other thing it does is you talk to people. You see them doing it. You say, oh, red team, blue team. Oh, there's that sound. There's people out there who start shaking. They're shivering. They say, oh, I think it's time to play. Little Pokemon. Let me just see in my my journal how many miles I've walked here. Quite a few. It's in kilometers. Remember, it's Japanese. It's weird. But anyway, how many miles is that? Lots.
DMV is tweeting about not driving.
Oh, yeah, everybody. A kid in Wyoming on Friday ran into it, was trying to find a Pokemon in a river, climbed over a fence, found a dead body instead.
Ew.
I don't think the person was killed. The person was not killed by Pokemon.
No,
but it was just coincidental.
But people are going to start running into cars and running into
Well, don't. Pay attention.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
Scary.
Free game. But if you really want to, you know, excel, and there will be some peer pressure to be better than your friends and stuff, you can buy Pokey coins with real American dollars. This thing game is so big that the servers were down almost all day Saturday as everybody joined. You just couldn't get into the game. Now I think it's a little bit better. And they decided not to roll it out. They were rolling it out worldwide. They're keeping the U.S., Australia, and New Zealand. Pokemon Go. Hey, it's something. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Pokemon Go! Gotta get them all. What a scam. Because basically they were selling little pieces of cardboard. Some of them had foil on them for like $5. And I remember we had to stop at the 7-Eleven. And every time I drove by, Henry would go. He was about, I don't know, 8 or 9. Oh, Pokemon. Gotta get some cards. Gotta get them all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. But now I'm caught up in it, and my son thinks I'm a nitwit. So it's kind of come
the
full circle.
The tables have turned.
It's come full circle. Dad, you're such a nerd. Hello there, Kim Schaffer.
Good morning.
Revealed something kind of awesome that you have somewhere. A large collection of Beanie Babies.
I do.
That was a big fad. I
hate to
that.
Admit it, but I do.
Pristine. In the wrapper and with the
tags?
Well,
there was no wrapper, but the tags are...
They're still on?
They have the plastic covers on them, so they didn't...
So you fell for the notion that someday those Beanie Babies are going to be worth big bucks.
I don't know. It started out with the McDonald's Happy Meals because they were giving away mini ones.
It was a crazy fad.
And
isn't it funny? I wonder, there's got to be books about this kind of communal insanity we go through from time to time with hula hoops and...
Yeah.
Beanie Babies. At one point, tulip bulbs in the 17th century Holland. At one point, a single tulip bulb cost more than the average annual income of a Dutchman.
What?
Yeah. Because that was one of the very first bubbles, the tulip bubble.
And now the tulips are everywhere.
Now a tulip bulb, 10 cents. Mm. Beanie Babies, even less. Not really worth any.
I can't believe the amount people were paying for certain Beanie Babies.
Well,
luckily, my mom worked at a toy store, so yeah. I had an in.
Like any investment strategy, it's not merely you got to know not merely when to get in, but when to get out.
Yep.
You got to sell the Beanie Babies at
right
their
away.
Peak, which was pretty much right away. Yeah. But you could have doubled your money. You could have taken that $5 Beanie Baby, sold it for $10.
Yeah. Oh, easily.
At some point.
Yeah.
Had you known, but see, you thought someday, oh no, they're going to be worth $100. Why sell now? And sometimes that happens. There's a guy. You know Bitcoin, right? The cryptocurrency. There's a guy who bought a pizza with, I think it was 20 Bitcoin. Because at the time, they weren't, you know, that was like $5.
And now it's worth.
Oh, let's see. Well, there's $600 of Bitcoin, I think. So it's $1,200, but it's been even more. At one point, that was $6,000 worth of Bitcoin.
Wow.
Or something like that.
And all he got was a pizza.
All he got was his. So you, again, it's all about when you get in and when you get out.
Kind of like real estate.
Like anything. Like life. You got to know when to get in. You got to know when to get out.
When to hold them, know when to play.
If you like technology, you got in at a good time. This is a good lifetime to be into technology, right? Right now, I think. Yeah. That's what we talk about at 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. The website is techguylabs.com. And you've been answering the phone. I haven't said the number but once, so.
I think everybody's playing Pokemon Go.
Would be interesting, wouldn't it? If nobody calls.
But Frank has an issue.
Frank is the only person in the continental United States who has not discovered Pokemon Go.
Yeah. Pacifica, nonetheless.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, I could sure use your wisdom, and I want to take issue with a person called David Angel who wrote DSL for Dummies, who in his book said, DSL, always on connection, instant internet access, no more busy signals, no drop connections, and no time limits. I've had this DSL connection for 10 years, and I'm satisfied with it. The speed's good enough for me. But this last month and a half, I could be on it like I am now. It just dropped out. And it DSL-like, but I was on for like 3 hours this morning, so it's not a speed stream problem, and it worked fine.
So, first of all, David wrote that book a long time ago, DSL for Dummies, and what he was comparing it with was not current modern internet standards, but dial-up modems, remember that?
Yeah.
And you had to dial. You would get dropped off if anybody in the house picked up the phone. Hello, who's this? And you're gone. There were time limits because it was expensive. That's what he's comparing it to. So it was a step ahead there.
But I what I'm hoping you can give, because I have landline, and so it's not the twisted pair.
No, let me look. Let me explain what's going on.
Okay.
Because this is really, really common. First of all, DSL was a bad idea from day one. DSL was the phone company originally thought, it stands for Digital Subscriber Line. That kind of gives you a hint. Right. They thought they were going to do something called video dial tone. Okay. This is a long time ago. They saw the success of the cable companies. They thought we could bring people television over their phone lines. So it's using the same copper twisted pair that you use for voice, and right. It's really pushing it hard to get any decent bandwidth. It's very dependent on how close to the central office you are.
Right.
More than 2 miles from the central office, it really hardly works at all, but it certainly slows down between there. But that's not your problem. Almost certainly your problem, because it was working fine, right?
Oh, yeah. I'd never had the drop-off
problem. It's possible that your internet service provider has gone downhill, because that happens too.
Okay.
But also, and very much more likely, and I think very common, you have an old, bad router. And people buy these boxes.
Okay.
Maybe it came to you from your DSL company, or maybe you bought an additional one. This used to be when you get a DSL modem, then you would have to buy a Linksys to plug into it to share it.
This is the original SpeedStream that came with the service, and I've had it.
How long?
Oh, from the beginning. But why does it operate like this morning?
It's worn out, dude.
Wait a minute. But I was up at 6 this morning, and it worked fine. There was no interruptions. I was on it for like 3 hours. And so why does it work? But it seems like maybe on into the day when the line may get busy or something. It like I say, now it's been out for, just when I called you, or about 11:19. And so I thought originally it was like a heating problem, too, but why would it be?
It's like worn out, dude. Buy a new router or go to SpeedStream and say your router is junk.
Okay.
I've had it from day one. This is very common. So many people now have really old, out-of-date, bad routers. You should replace your router, get this, every couple of years. And if you bought a junky old $40 Linksys 10 years ago, which is probably what you've got, SpeedStream didn't go all out on a high-quality router for your installation. That thing was worn out 5 years ago, and it's just getting worse. It drops. So, by the way, one way to test this is unplug the router, plug it back in. Is the DSL come back, everything fine for a little while? Yeah, then it's the router. Could be SpeedStream, could be your provider. But really, these things, first of all, we're buying cheap junk routers to begin with, and then they wear out. It's worth buying a good router. If you're using Wi-Fi, you should be thinking about spending, hold your breath, between $100 and $200 for your router, not $40. Don't get that blue Linksys box in a big display down at the Fry's. That's not it. You need a good router. I would recommend an Asus, and I've just been trying these out, and they're very expensive. But if you want good Wi-Fi and you're having trouble with Wi-Fi, an Eero, E-E-R-O, it's like $500. Hold your breath. I told you, hold your breath. A good router is a computer. It's going to cost you money, and yours is worn out. Get a new one. I'll give you some recommendations when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. You see, I got my salad ready. I got my salad ready because these ads always make me so very, very hungry. Blue Apron is such a good idea. Oh, I love this. Their mission to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, including you. I know you're saying, oh, I'm no cook. Oh, you are. You'll be amazed. While supporting a more sustainable food system, while setting the highest standard for ingredients and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron. Now, here's the deal. You've had a long, hard day. You want to go home. You want to have a nice meal. Of course you do. But you don't have time to do menu planning, shopping. What do you got in the refrigerator? A jar of mustard? 4 pickles? and a frozen 12-year-old capon. What? What are you going to make with that? See, you don't have to. So that's why you end up at the Applebee's around the corner, right? Or, you know, having fast food. Because what are you going to do? Blue Apron solves that problem. I love it. Oh, those my Blue Apron day, when I come home and the Blue Apron box is on the porch, I know I'm going to have some wonderful meals in there. Free delivery in 99% of the continental United States. And you choose a delivery day that fits your schedule. They come in a refrigerated box, these Blue Apron ingredients. So the food's fresh. And by the way, no frozen meats, no frozen fish, just delicious, delicious food from local farms, 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. The seafood is sourced sustainably. The beef is raised humanely. The chickens are free range. The pork is raised naturally. It's the stuff you would get for yourself if you had the time. But what's cool is you're going to get recipes you may never even have thought of making. And within 40 minutes, you're going to have an amazing meal, often with ingredients you never thought of. Let's see what's cooking for the week of July 18th this week. Now, they have a two-person plan and a family plan. The family plan's for larger families, of course, with kid-friendly ingredients. But look for the two-person plan, serrano pepper and goat cheese burgers with zucchini cilantro slaw. Seems like gourmet, going to a... See, now this is the part of the ad where my mouth starts to water, and I wish I had something. Oh, lemon chicken and green beans with Parmesan roasted summer squash and potatoes. Shrimp and, well, look at this, squid ink spaghetti with summer vegetables and mint. It's like going to the best restaurant ever. But you made it fresh, and you made it yourself, and the sense of accomplishment is amazing. And by the way, for date night, oh, this is guaranteed, man. You light a couple of candles. You put out the fresh pappardelle pasta with the summer tomato olive ragu and the ricotta salata, and you say, "Here you go, baby. I cooked it for you." It's actually fun. In the family plan, you're getting your kids cooking. You're building these great family bonds. You're not only having a great meal. By the way, research shows Blue Apron families cook three times more often, and they cook together. Crispy cod and summer squash with quinoa and arugula salad, or Za'atar chicken burgers and oven fries with feta, labneh spread, and garlic chips. It's good stuff! I want you to try it. Your first three meals are free, including free shipping. Go to blueapron.com/twit. blueapron.com/twit. You'll learn some great cooking, some great recipes. You'll have some wonderful meals. Your family will eat together. It's wonderful. blueapron.com/twit. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. So many of you, so many people suffer with internet that is not good. And it's not the problem. Now, sometimes I admit absolutely could be the problem of the internet service provider. And pity the poor DSL provider, because they're riding on top of two little copper wires that were designed for scratchy phone 90 years ago. And the fact that they're getting any data down that pipe of any speed at all is kind of amazing. But that's DSL technology. But, you know, if you have bad wires in the house, if you have bad wires outside the house, all sorts of things can happen. It can be horribly unreliable. So, of course, if you have DSL, you know, it's hard to diagnose. All you could do is rely upon the kindness of your internet service provider and hope that that internet service provider is a good ISP, and we'll look at the wires and say, oh yeah, we see where the problem lies. If it lies in your house, it gets more complicated, because they're not really responsible for the wires in your house. In fact, you may remember when you got phone service and you got DSL service, they may have offered you a in-house insurance plan, an in-house wiring insurance plan, so that, you know, you pay $1 a month or whatever, and they guarantee to fix the in-house wiring if there's problems, because that's a nightmare. And I don't know if you've ever gone outside to look at the phone block in your house and the wires coming into that, and you could see why it's amazing you're getting a megabit, let alone 5 or 6 megabits per second over that. So DSL, you know, struggles a little bit because of that. Distance from the office, quality of the copper, inside and out. And then, you know, service providers vary greatly. They also vary greatly in their willingness to support it. However, if I were going to make a rule, a general rule about where internet service falls down, most of the time it's the router. And obviously this means just more than 51% of the time, or whatever, 60, probably 70% of the time. It's not all cases, but the router is one of those things people just, they think of it as an appliance, they set it, they forget it, they have it for years, they pay no attention to it. And if you, but yet, if you have discovered that internet problems can go away if you reboot the router, by the way, if you call your internet service provider, it's the first thing they'll say, reboot the router, unplug it, plug it back in, and if that fixes it, router may be at fault. Sometimes seeing if there's new firmware and downloading it could fix it, but most of the time not. Most of the time it's just worn out. They do wear out. They get unreliable. They're cheap. So I'm going to recommend a website. It's called The Wire Cutter. Really great website. A guy named Brian Lamb started it. He used to be a gadget editor at Gizmodo and decided, you know what people really want? They just want recommendations. What the one thing to buy? They don't want a ranking of 10 things. They want one thing. What's the best thing? And so that was the original site, was the best thing in every category of geekery. They have very good reviews of DSL modems, of routers, of cable modems. I would trust their recommendations, absolutely. They're really quite expert. And as I mentioned, you should get a much better router. In general, most people are putting up with, suffering with a bad router more often than anything else. Of course, the internet service providers kind of exacerbate the problem because they very often will give you the router with the cable modem, often in one box, which means it's not very good to begin with. And then they charge you $5 a month for it. They rent it back and they never update it or anything. They just wait till you complain. That's why, in general, what I recommend is, if you must, use the DSL modem provided by the provider, but not their router. Use your own. Go out and get your own better router. Get a modern router, an A, B, G, A, C router. That's your... and this is why people don't. So the Wi-Fi technology is 802.11. The first one that came out was just 802.11. And then there was B. Then there was A. Then there was G. And now it's AC. Those are the different standards. AC is the most modern. If you get an AC router, it'll do all the other ones. And you're going to spend more than you think. And by the way, I think it's worth it. You're only going to buy one of these routers every few years. And how much do you spend a month on your internet service? I mean, and how much of an annoyance is it when it goes out? Really annoying. You wouldn't buy a water heater that only worked 3 hours a day. You wouldn't buy, you know, this isn't a utility. You want it to work. There is a whole category of newer, very costly Wi-Fi routers that work differently than the traditional. I'm very happy with the Asus, by the way. And, if you're willing to spend around $200, it's an excellent Wi-Fi router. You'll continue to use the DSL modem or the cable modem. By the way, they have recommendations for those, too, on Wirecutter. You can get a new one of those, thewirecutter.com. That certainly wouldn't hurt either. Get a newer modem or make sure it's that your internet service provider says it's okay and that you buy one that's on their recommended list. But often that'll help too. This new category of Wi-Fi routers do things a little differently than the Asus. Now, I'm still using, I have a variety of solutions in my house because it's kind of a lab. I use the AC3200 from Asus. It's an excellent Wi-Fi router. Kind of looks like a spider. It's three bands. It's 2.4, 5, and 2.5 gigabit bands. Very good router. Very expensive. But like I said, you get what you pay for. Even more expensive, though, is this new category. They're mesh routers. They work differently. In the past, if you had bad Wi-Fi connectivity as you get more distant from your access point, you would put an extender in. And Asus and Linksys and Netgear and everybody sells these. But they would kind of work. They don't work great. And so, but you could kind of expand the footprint of your wireless access. In theory, these guys only go about 150 feet. In practice, even less because there's walls and all sorts of materials in between you and your access point, and it's sometimes hard for them to get through. So an extender will help, But I'm really starting to be interested in this new category. It's unfortunately extremely pricey. Eero was the first, E-E-R-O. And as I said, $500 for three units. You put a base station unit in and then two satellite units. I've found this to give me the best wireless footprint I've ever had. I mean, to the point where I can be halfway down the street and still on my Wi-Fi. Certainly covers my whole yard and the house and everything. But very, very pricey. There's some competitors coming. There's one that's delayed called Luma, L-U-M-A. I've also ordered that. I'll let you know when that comes out. And there's a newer technology, won't be out till maybe Christmas, called the Plume. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, maybe last week. It's different, so I'd have to test it, but it's less expensive. These guys work by creating a mesh as opposed to extending. It's a little more complicated. They also do some smart things. For instance, one of the real issues with routers is keeping it up to date, especially for security. Another reason to get rid of your old router, it's almost certainly insecure. People like the hacker group Lizard Squad last Christmas used insecure routers, tens of thousands of them, to bring down the PlayStation network and the Xbox network by just taking over people's routers. So you want a secure router. The Eero routers are updated constantly without any of intervention on your part. They send you updates, which is the way it should be. So they're much more secure. They also claim they're going to update it to make it faster and more reliable as well. Be interesting to watch. So far, I've had very good results. $500, though. But how much is good internet worth to you? 8888-ASK-LEO. All right, enough of that. We shall move on. Take more of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I replaced the AirPort Extreme. I had the last, most recent edition of the AirPort Extreme and was getting poor results. The dropping internet, but also distance-wise. And I replaced that, the AirPort Extreme, with this Asus. Much better. About, you know, similar cost, maybe a little more expensive for the Asus. But much better than the AirPort Extreme. Apple used to be the king of the hill on this. Not so much anymore. As with everything, Apple has kind of let the state-of-the-art pass them by. So this is really excellent. They have a newer model as well, but I can vouch for this one. This is what I use. Now, I have a Comcast business class service and Comcast consumer class service in my house. Don't ask me why. It's a long story. It's not something I wanted. It's something Comcast gave me. At great cost. And I went in and I said, can I just turn one of these off? And they said, it'll cost you more. Wait a minute, it'll cost me more to have less service? Yes, it'll cost you more, so you might as well just keep it. Okay. So, but what's been good because it's a test bed. So I have this Asus on the business class router, and it really does a great job. And lots of configuration. This is a geeky router. Lots of configuration, QoS, all sorts of stuff you can do in there. And then I put the Eero on the consumer class, and I've been told everybody in the house, use the Eero, and everybody's much happier. I don't hear from family members saying, the internet's down anymore. And the speeds are much better. So the Eero really solved a big pain point. It's a tough sell because it's $500. That is, I wish it weren't so expensive. But I no longer recommend the AirPort Extreme. Very disappointing. Ubiquiti is the best way, probably the best way to go if you're a super geek and you know what you're doing. We use Ubiquiti here, I think. You know, Dr. Mom, we're going to inevitably talk about this on Twit today. We've got Odokta, Siva Vaidyanathan, Jeff Jarvis, and Jason Heiner. We've got a kind of a blue ribbon panel, and we're going to absolutely talk about the technology issues in the most recent killings. But there's an excellent, I'll point you to an excellent Reddit thread about the use of the robot on the C4. I'll put a link in it for you. I don't know the whole story yet. I understand that there's some some concern about the idea of police using a bomb robot to blow up a suspect. But and I share that concern. But after reading this thread, I posted in the chat. I think I'm a little bit more sanguine about it. I don't feel it will become a precedent. It was not autonomous, so it's you know, some of the people in Reddit are calling it a bomb on a stick. It's not that much different from a bomb on a stick. Yeah, we've been trying to get Snapatunde on. Baratunde's hard to get. Even now that he's left The Daily Show, he's still very hard to get. We've been begging him to come on. But I did want some people of color on the show today. So we asked O'Doctor, and we have Siva. Siva and Jeff covered journalism, too. And I think that was important for today's show. So, and anybody who works with robots, by the way, does not think Asimov's laws are in any way useful. I might point out. It's a nice science fiction conceit, but it's not anything that they would be programming into artificial intelligences. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Peter in San Diego's next. Hi, Peter.
Hello, Leo.
I hear the traffic report in the background. Slow Ride was the right song to play, I believe. what can I do for you?
Well, I'm attempting to update my Windows Vista laptop. And when I attempted it recently, it did show that there were multiple Vista system updates available. Then it attempted to download forever and ever and ever.
I'm wondering if you're having the same problem. Windows 7, people have been complaining about this. Very, very slow updates. If you're trying to update Windows 7, it will take as much as a week. I don't know if this is the same issue, but...
Not sure, but the next time I tried it, it went into checking for update mode, yeah. And it just did that for hours, just cycling through. It never downloaded anything or even showed anything that was available for download, and I tried that multiple times. When I did go to the Microsoft support site, they directed me to another page that just says that Microsoft does not support this update quick fix for Vista anymore.
Yeah, Vista has been, obsoleted. I'm surprised. You know, you one of the reasons you don't hear a lot of complaints about that, you hear a lot of people say, oh, I want to still use XP. You don't hear a lot of people saying, I still want to use Vista.
it directed me to a DIAG-CAB cab file, but then when I downloaded it and tried to open it, it says only XP or Windows 7 can open it. Vista can't open that.
So, you weren't working with a clean install, right? This was, or what, or were you?
No. Had this installed for years.
For years, yeah.
I did find something on a blog or something about saying that if I were to reset Windows Update, that might be the solution.
Certainly.
And it listed several DLL files.
Yeah, I'd be very careful about going in there and modifying that. If you search Microsoft's support site, support.microsoft.com, they have a troubleshooter for blocked updates. You need to find the one for Vista.
Yeah, that's the one I tried, and
it wouldn't work, huh?
It took me to the page, but then it said this is no longer supported for Vista.
You know, what's ironic, or not ironic, but what's frustrating is that Vista is still is not end of life. XP is, but Vista is still supposedly being supported by updates.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what I can tell you about this. I don't know what to do. I can't. I wish I had a magic wand. You can't, is it your sense that there's an update that failed and it's blocking it? Is that what you think is going on?
I'm not sure. I know those updates are available, but I have it set up so that it shows me they're available, then I have to select them to actually download them, and then it would never download. But then upon subsequent attempts, it just goes into perpetual checking for update mode, and it never even shows me the list of updates available.
The thing we usually tell people when this happens is to get your updates or offline updates. In other words, instead of, and you know, if you think about it, updating in place, which is what we do with Windows, is fraught with peril. You're changing the engine on a flying plane. You're removing the tablecloth from the dinner settings and then trying to put it back a new one in without disturbing anything. It's fraught with peril. So if you go into your Windows updates and I can't remember what it looks like in Vista, but if you mess around on the left there, on the column on the left, you should be able to do offline updates. Sometimes they call them, you know, network updates, IT updates. The idea is if you're an IT department, you would download these updates so you don't have to download it individually on each machine. Save you time and bandwidth. You just download it once, put it on a USB key, and go around from machine to machine. You want a standalone updater. And then you want to try running that. Often that works better.
Okay.
Now, I understand that Windows Update is saying you don't need any updates. But in the case of this, you don't have to need that update on that machine. The idea is the IT guy's machine is up to date, but he could still go and get older updates, download them, put them on a USB key, and run them. And I think that generally works. It's been so long since I've used Vista. I can't give you more exact details, but that's at least something I would try.
It is worth a try, yeah.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't say that it's all updated. It just keeps looking, and it sounds like it's hung up there.
Yeah, boy, I've seen that so many times. I am so sick of Windows. I'll be honest with you. It just seems like a pack of frustration all rolled up into a little tar ball of badness. I'm so frustrated with it, and I know we need to use it. I'm looking at three separate Windows laptops on my desk right now, each of which has unique and apparently unsolvable problems. One of them comes from Microsoft. It's a Surface Book, and it's just, you look at it and you go, couldn't you do better? couldn't you just do a little bit better? Microsoft, incidentally, really, I think doesn't even want to be in this game. One of the reasons they're pushing everybody so hard, and you might consider this, to Windows 10, is they don't want to do this anymore. They want one version of Windows that they just keep up to date forever. And that's what Windows 10, I think, is. So eventually, you're just going to want to go to Windows 10. Even on older hardware, if you can run Vista, you should be able to run Windows 10.
You'll
have to buy it.
Yeah.
Not free. It was free only for Windows 7 and later, not for Windows Vista. You're just one version off. But I would try that. Are you using any unusual hardware or old software?
No, not really.
Yeah.
No, pretty standard.
Then I think a lot of problems go away when you use the current version of Windows. Microsoft's much more active in supporting that. They've clearly lost heart on updating Vista, even though it's still theoretically being supported. Even their own support page no longer works.
Right.
Clearly, they've lost interest. They've moved on. Maybe it's time for you to do the same.
Okay.
Sorry, but try the offline update first. If you Google offline update Vista, you probably find a step-by-step that will help you. And then if that doesn't, maybe it's $100, $110, I think, to buy a copy of Windows 10 if you have a previous version of Windows, maybe even less. And then your troubles, in theory, go away because Microsoft no longer, this is it. There's not going to be a Windows 11, at least that's what Microsoft says today. This is it. And the way the world is moving, it makes sense. All right, we're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. More of your calls to come. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. That's the theory. You'll never buy a copy of Windows again, is the theory. Now, Microsoft may at some point say, we missed that revenue, but I don't think so. I think this is where... I think that's where all computing is headed. Microsoft has other ways of making money. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. My phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO. Call in, complain if you wish, 888-827-5536. Make suggestions, ask questions. It's not like a user group of the airwaves, a chance for everybody who uses technology of any kind to call and talk and ask for help and help other people too. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can use Skype to call us if you're outside that area. It shouldn't cost you anything. Website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Mark in Los Angeles. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Having a strange problem. So when I click links in my browser, for example, either from Google or, like, let's say I'm on a news website and I'm clicking different articles, you know, typically the link will change color from blue. I think it usually changes to red or pink or something. It's been a while since it's been working properly, so I can't remember now, but maybe purple. But anyway,
Haven't used the internet in a while, have you, sir?
No, I use
the reason I mention that is that's how it used to be a long time ago. There was a color for links and followed links, and it would change from blue to, you're right, another color. It really depended, light blue sometimes, purple sometimes. Hasn't done that in a long time.
Oh. Well, I've been using a program, some kind of Chrome extension that maybe was doing it for me.
Because that's something that, with the advent of cascading style sheets, CSS, most websites either don't do followed links or they choose a different color. I do it because I agree with you. You kind of want to know where you've been.
Yes.
But I'm just went to Google News just to make sure that I'm not crazy about this. I clicked on a link and I went back to the same page on Google News, and it doesn't look like the link has changed color in any way.
Oh. Okay.
So in other words, they no longer do that.
Oh.
It's dependent on the website. It's dependent. Now, you can't override it. So that's kind of that's something you really want, you can have, and you probably noticed this in the settings and never acted on it. You can have a custom style sheet. It's something that is probably not for the faint of heart, but you can say in a style sheet, you'd have to learn a little bit of CSS, you can say what happens to links and followed links. Followed links are ones you've already seen.
Mm-hmm.
And you can change the color just as you want it to do. And you can do that without modifying in any other way, modifying the settings. So I'm just looking now. You said you're using Chrome. Oh, yes. Now maybe there's an easier way to do this. Let me look in accessibility, because this might be considered an accessibility feature. I would look in accessibility. There's a number of accessibility extensions you can add, and I bet you one of them will let you do this. It's dependent on the website. So if you go to our website, twit.tv, we do change, I believe, let me make sure. I didn't design the site, but I worked with the designers who did it. I think that we change links after you followed them. Let me click a link. See what happens. And I like that. I agree with you, because then you know. Oh, I've seen it, and it's particularly useful if you're going through a whole list of things. We're not doing it, I guess. Let me go to Google search. Is that where you're noticing it most?
So maybe that's it. Maybe I was using some Chrome extension, and maybe that extension has stopped working with the new Chrome.
On this link. I just searched for my name because, of course, what is more interesting than my own name? And I've clicked the link, and now I'm going to go back to Google search and search for my name again and see. Yeah, it does. It changes it to a purple. So Google search it's not very different. It's kind of a purple instead of a blue.
Mm-hmm.
But it is still doing that. So if you see no change at all at blue, 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 then maybe you do have something else running, or maybe you have a feature turned off or feature turned on. So I am seeing, you're right, I am seeing on Google search they still do this. It isn't as dramatic as it used to be. And as I said, you can change that by creating a custom style sheet that makes it red if you want it to be red.
Okay.
You may be, it may be doing it, and you don't, and you're not noticing because the colors are so similar. In fact, I bet you people with red blue color blindness might not even notice it. You're not colorblind, are you?
No, I'm not.
The other thing you can do is try resetting the browser. There's a setting to do that with Chrome. And your browser, it's not a bad idea to check what extensions you've got installed, too. You can also do that in the settings. Or just manage extensions. Right-click on an extension and say manage extensions. I find that I add extensions sometimes, you know, and then forget I did it. And I have hundreds of extensions in there that I don't remember.
Right.
Maybe there is something doing that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is site-dependent. The person who designs the site will decide what to do with followed links. Google search still does it. So if you're not seeing it in Google search and it goes from a blue to a purple, that's very, very subtle change, then something else is going on. Now, if you're in incognito mode, somebody's pointing out in the chat room, that's a good point. If you're in incognito mode, maybe you wouldn't do that because it doesn't keep track of where you've been, right? So I know I could do an experiment. We could try it, but... yeah, the color won't change with private browsing, Caribbean in the chat room is saying. So maybe that's it. Don't do private browsing because obviously it has to remember what you did to change that links. But it is nowadays, it used to be the standard. Web browsing has changed so significantly. It used to be that's just how it was. And now it's really up to the website. And many don't implement that, the followed link. I think it's good usability to do that, though. I agree with you. Glenn in Winnetka, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Leo. I have a Windows 7 desktop, and I want to make it dual boot with 7 and 10 by using the free Windows 10 download, put it on a DVD.
Shouldn't be any problem at all. In fact, I think when you do the download and run it, it will say, I see a copy of Windows 10. Would you like to install side by side or wipe it and do a complete 10? I believe. Let me just check real quickly.
Well, the thing I'm most worried about is, will I be able to do Windows Update on both of them, both 7 and 10?
Yes.
Oh, okay, even though I've only paid for, you know,
yeah.
I've only paid once.
Yeah, that's the beauty of this free upgrade. You are a legitimate owner of Windows 10. By the way, at some point you could wipe out Windows 7 if you get comfortable with 10, and it will still be licensed to you. It's not a problem. You can wipe out 10, and then 6 months from now, go back to it. It will still be licensed to you. The license is associated with the hardware. Once 10 is licensed on that machine, it's done.
Yeah, but even though it's licensed to the machine, I can still update Windows 7 also.
Yep.
So if I want to instead do a clone of the boot drive and have a 7 clone and a 10 clone and switch back and forth, I'm free to do so.
Yep. There are articles online. I'll put some links at techguylabs.com, our website, for the step-by-step because I don't want you to – I want you to follow the recipe. I don't want to just tell you over the air and you say, I got the general idea, and then something go wrong because that is a risk, and it certainly should back up your hard drive before you do this. But the theory is – and again, follow a recipe. You're going to open the disk manager in Windows 7 and create a new partition. You can just scooch stuff over and create a new partition. Usually that's a very straightforward thing to do. Then run the Windows 10 installer.
Uh-huh.
And the Windows 10 installer will, you go to the custom install. Don't do the straight ahead install because that install on top of your Windows 7. Do the custom install and it'll give you the option to do a dual boot. And then when you start up the machine, you get a choice. What do you like to do today, 7 or 10? Now, remember, when you're updating, you have to update from within that operating system. So once go to 7, you run Windows Update, it will update. Yeah, you don't lose that right.
Great. Oh, that's fantastic. Because I keep hearing all this bad news about people that, you know, are on 7. I mean, we're on 7, now they're 10, and they've got problems.
Yeah, you know, remember, there's 350 million Windows 10 users. If even 0.1% have a problem, it's going to sound like lots of people. It is going to be lots of people. So, in general, it's pretty safe and straightforward. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our Tech Guy podcast today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. I got to tell you, if you've recently bought a home, if you've gone through the mortgage application process, you're probably thinking, this is straight out of the 18th century. This is Bob Cratchit. This is quill pen stuff, not Rocket Mortgage. You're bringing the loan process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and this is the key, completely online process. It is amazing. It's like night and day from the previous way of doing things. So whether you're refinancing your house or you're looking to buy a new house, maybe you're just shopping for a new house and you want to pre-qualify, you got to go to Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The website, quickenloans.com/tech guy. They've taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts out of applying for a mortgage. That you don't have to search through old files or go through a lot of paperwork. In fact, with a press of a click of a mouse or the touch of a finger, because you can do this on a tablet or a phone, you can easily share your bank statements, your pay stubs. You can get approved in minutes. You can get a completely customized solution because computers, right? And it's all just for you, and it's so awesome. On your phone, your tablet, you don't even have to get up off the couch. QuickenLoans.com/tech guy for Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. It's QuickenLoans.com/tech guy. You're going to love it. 8888 Ask Leo. Linda in Los Angeles, you're next. Hi, Linda.
Oh, hi. I have a Sony VAIO laptop. And I did a system restore about a month ago, and then everything has been okay. Now, every time I turn the computer on, it says there's new hardware, and it's called PCI modem. And so I looked online, and it said to click on my computer, go to properties, and then go to drivers. And so I did that, and it has a yellow question mark with PCI modem. So I could uninstall it. While the computer's on, but now every time I turn it off and on, it recognizes the new hardware.
That's very frustrating, isn't it? Do you know offhand if you have a PCI modem?
I don't know.
So and a PCI is the card. Is it a laptop or a desktop? You said it's a VAIO.
Laptop.
Yeah.
Laptop. And then when I try to install it with this wizard where you go through the steps, it won't let you install it. It asked for the disk.
Yeah.
But I don't have the disk.
So that's what's happening, by the way, is there's some hardware in your VAIO that Windows doesn't know about. And so it doesn't have a driver for it. So it's hoping you will have the driver for it. So there's
two. How would it get there? I've had it for 10 years.
Well, you put a new version of Windows on it. And it didn't have a driver for it. Now here's this. There are two ways to solve this. One is you could just disable it. And it wouldn't bother you anymore. But I don't want you to do that because you might need it.
Right.
So the best thing to do is to go to the Sony site and download updated drivers for your hardware. So that PCI modem is something on your motherboard that came with the laptop. Apparently, Windows doesn't know about it. But Sony does.
All of a sudden?
Yeah, sure. But Sony does. So you're going to get the latest... probably motherboard drivers, but what you're going to do is search for that particular laptop model and search for drivers. And this is only in the Sony site and download, don't get it from anywhere else, but download the drivers from the Sony site for that particular laptop and install them. Probably will make this.
Why would it show up all of a sudden and then it asks for installation and then it won't let you install? And then when I uninstall it, in my computer, it still shows up every time I turn the computer on.
So when the laptop came to your house, it had a driver on it. But then you updated the operating system, right?
System restore.
Or you did a system restore. Okay.
I had to do a system restore about a month ago because
So the system restore disabled the existing driver. Windows said, you know, it sees hardware, but doesn't see software to drive it. And it says, I need this. It doesn't have it. Please give me the disk that has it. You know who has the disk that has it? Sony. So go to... Yeah. So you disabled it or destroyed it or deleted it. Or maybe it got deleted by accident. But somehow it's gone and you need to get it back from Sony. Or failing that, you could go back to the device manager where you saw that yellow triangle. Right click on that driver and say disable.
But you might need it. Uninstall. Okay, I'll try it.
Yeah, I would go to Sony and get it. I would get it from Sony.
And which driver do you think I should ask for? Because
get them all.
Get them all. Okay.
Probably there isn't a separate PC modem driver. Almost certainly it's the motherboard driver.
So go to the Sony website and download a new motherboard driver.
Yeah, I would get them all, though, just in case it's something else. You couldn't. It doesn't hurt. You can reinstall drivers. Okay. It's the same version and nothing will happen.
Okay.
Do you have a modem on that laptop, like you could connect a phone to it?
Oh, yes. It has USB and phone, yes.
Oh, do you use the modem?
I don't. Oh, for the phone? No, not right now. I just use Wi-Fi.
Yeah. So you could disable it. It's just that if you tried to use it, then it wouldn't work anymore.
So, no, I don't want to disable it. I was just curious.
Fix it. I'm going to put a link. Somebody in the chat room has given me a link to the driver site for Sony. It'll be on our website, techguylabs.com. You click it. Download whatever drivers there are, and remember, it's for that model. You want to get it for that VAIO, and install it, and that should fix it. Drivers, you know, are just little programs, right? They're the programs that translate between the Windows operating system and the hardware on your system. Microsoft doesn't make your system; Sony does. So Sony knows all about the hardware on your system. So typically, the hardware manufacturer makes little bits of software called drivers that talk to Windows and to the hardware because they know all about the hardware, right? Now, probably Sony didn't make the hardware either. Probably that modem came from another company like Realtek. So Realtek gave Sony the drivers, and then Sony has them on their site, and you're going to download the drivers, and it'll work. Usually, you know, we're a little spoiled because usually Microsoft's really good about having drivers for every possible kind of hardware. For some reason, probably because it's very old, most people don't use modems anymore. Microsoft does not have a driver available for that piece of hardware in Windows Update. Normally, you'd get it from Windows Update. In fact, most of the time, that's why the advice you're getting is delete the driver, and then Windows Update will put a new one in. Except Windows Update doesn't have one. Windows doesn't have one. Only Sony has one. So you have to go to Sony and get the disk it's asking for. In effect, you just download a file. Little confusing, I understand. And I'm not sure why it happened. That's probably a question computer users, humans in general, probably shouldn't ask a lot of why questions. But really, with technology, you know, don't ask a why question. Why? Who knows? Just because. Ben in Fresno, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I know you're updating your cost screeners Windows machine.
you watched us do that off the air, huh, during the commercial.
Yeah. I just wanted to let people know, for those people who are using like screen readers and print enlargement software, Microsoft has actually extended that deadline using Access technology.
Oh, that's fantastic. For how long?
You know what? They say right now that there is no...
Oh, bravo. Bravo.
You know, because a lot of people were having trouble with it. You know,
Are you using a screen reader with the Windows 10?
I'm using JAWS with it.
And it works okay or not?
Parts of it does.
So that's why. So some people may say, you know what, I'm sticking with Windows 7 because JAWS works fine.
Yeah.
And Microsoft's response is, yeah, we understand. And as soon as JAWS works fine with Windows 10, you still will get the free upgrade. Good for them. That's the way to do it.
You know, they've been pretty good about it. I mean, they've actually come out and said, you know what, their new browser. And they said, you know what, this doesn't work yet. Go back to using Internet Explorer. And they explained how to make that the default.
Good for them. Hey, Ben, thank you for letting us know. Yeah, because for everybody else, July 29th is the end of the line. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And Chris Marquardt, the photo guy, just around the corner. Just around the corner. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine.
That's good. Shaking your salad?
Shaking my salad. It's all the exercise I need.
So I have a little series for...
Oh.
The tech guy.
Good.
Over the next few weeks, I want to talk secret photographic superpowers.
Ah, I like it. Secret photographic superpowers.
And we'll look into different kinds of special photography and how to become a photographic superhero.
Photographic superhero.
That's catchy, isn't it?
You're a superhero. Hey, Chris. Got to get them all.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know.
Red, we're Team Red. Just want you to know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What, blue? Yellow?
Yes.
I can't help you.
My friends picked yellow. I'm sorry.
No, you got to go with your friends. That's okay. Got to catch them all.
How's it going?
It's going good, you know.
You've got a Pokestop right in front of you.
I know. Isn't that awesome?
That's pretty good.
But it's too far away. I have to walk up to the window. And
up to the window?
Yeah.
It works from right there.
Oh, hey. There's a looks like a Pidgey or something.
My friends had me download it last night.
And?
I haven't started playing it.
Look at a wild Spearow.
Is it worth it?
Oh, yeah.
If you're playing it with your
it's friends. So fun.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Look, here, I'll show you. We're going to get, I'm going to catch the wild Spearow. See, it's the, see the augmented reality? You can see it in the environment.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I used to like Pokemon games, right?
Yeah.
I play Pokemon Snap.
Well, good. If you've paid Pokemon, this will seem familiar to you. So I think I caught it. Let's see. Sometimes they can escape. One, two. If it shakes three times, I got it. But who wants a Spearow? I don't want a Spearow. I got plenty of Spearows. So there you go. Now you can power it up or evolve it if you have enough Spearow candy.
Yeah.
Which I don't. Yeah, so that one's red. Good. So we must have taken back the seed bank because it was yellow. We took back the... Oh, no, that's the Heritage Mural. No, that's... I hit the wrong thing. Yeah, it's the seed bank. Wow. Look at that. See, these... What's interesting is these hit points are getting higher and higher now to take over a gym. They're getting...
Yep.
It's getting harder and harder.
As the game is out.
Yep.
Level.
Yep. Ugh. Who are these people? They must be playing all the time. Oh, there's another animal.
Leo, no joke. I was out there, saw like...
Wild Eevee.
I know.
It's kind of mind-boggling.
I was with a group of friends who were walking around before I came to work, having a lot of fun, but, man, so many other people.
I found a little glitch, though, because I ran out of Pokeballs, but then I just got more somehow without getting any more. So maybe it just they regenerate after all. Oh, that Eevee got away.
You lost the Eevee.
Oh, she's a good dodger, too. Boink, mister. So I'm wasting Pokeballs.
Yes.
Oh, now the server's down. Dang it. Oh. Come on, Eevee.
Come on.
Got her. Got to get them all.
Got to catch them all.
Got to catch them all. Why is it so far away? I think it's not where. I think the server's down. See, the ball's just staying there. Very far away.
It's been cool, like, going around finding out where people's stuff is.
Isn't it neat? It's so neat. Yeah, I've lost it. It's the server. Too many people using it. Of course, Serenity Post. So, we're going to do, what is it? Magician's Magic?
Secret Superpowers.
Secret Superpowers.
Secret Superpowers.
Chris Marquardt's here, our photo guy. Hey, Chris Marquardt.
Hello.
He joins us each week to help us become better digital photographers. And it doesn't have to be
Try
with a
best.
Fancy camera. It could be with a camera phone. So, superpowers, hey?
Well, I've thought about this. You've most likely seen like a beautiful panorama or a great HDR or some panning shots where you move the camera or amazing pictures of the sun or the moon, the stars or lightning. And I thought to make this into a little series, photographic superpowers. So
I
want to go into all of these different topics and explain how they're done. And
okay.
Then you can do them too.
Cool.
Sounds good?
Yep. Give me a photographic superpower.
Let's start with the first one. Well, it's kind of a week too late, but let's talk about fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful
I tried.
Photos. You've probably by now seen a lot of them in your
yep. Instagram,
your news,
Facebook,
and everywhere
yep.
you look.
Yep.
So let's get this started. Fireworks are, of course, the realm of the tripod. So you want the camera on something that doesn't move because you will need to expose for, it's a gut feel, about 10 seconds. So you want to be ready before the firework goes up. Then you want to expose. And then when the firework's done, you want to stop exposing. That's kind of how you do this. Now, it's a bit scary, but you have to go into manual to set your camera to the M mode, which means the camera will be completely in charge. The camera won't try to do anything automatic for you. And that's important because if you try to do this in automatic, you're going to fail. It's not going to work. So set your camera to manual mode, set it on a tripod, get a remote release, kind of a cable release, maybe even an infrared release, something that lets you trip the shutter without you having to touch the camera, because then you would move it and that would give you, well, could possibly with fireworks actually give you interesting effects. I've seen people who moved the camera while firework was going off and that was cool looking, but it's not a controlled thing. So you will have to play with that. So shutter open, long exposures, use a remote release. Now determining that shutter speed is, yeah, it takes a bit of trial and error. So read up online. There's lots of sources. But a good starting point is 10 seconds, an aperture of f11 and ISO 100. That's kind of a starting value. And then check on the back of your camera if that works or if it doesn't, and adjust accordingly. Now, the release is manual. The exposure is manual. But there are another few parameters that you want manual too. There's manual focus, because the camera will have a hard time focusing in the night because it needs something to focus on. And if there's nothing, that's a bit of a tough thing. So
yeah,
you
want
to set your camera on.
Pulses the focus.
Well, yes, and you can set it to manual. What you can do is you can wait for the first fireworks to go up, focus on those, and then take the camera into manual focus mode. Switch it off from switch it away from automatic focus and leave it at that. That's kind of a good starting point there as well. White balance, you need that manually as well. Well, you don't need to, but it's kind of nicer if you do. If you have a camera that you can set to what we call Kelvin settings, 3600 Kelvin, that's a good spot to be on. 3200 to 3600 will result in quite pleasing colors from the fireworks. And here's one really important one. This is really important. Set the display of your camera to its lowest possible brightness. You know, when you shoot during sunlight, you shoot during the day, you have the display blasted you because it has to. When you do the same thing at night, it will still blast at you and it will give you a false sense of brightness. So it will just be too bright for the night. Set it to the lowest brightness possible. And this way you can kind of trust it. Still, it would help if you learn to read a histogram. But this is a good starting point. Set the display to lowest brightness and then expose. If you don't want to time this with a remote release, what you can also do is open that shutter for longer. Like if you have a remote release that you can actually lock in place. So you can open the shutter and leave it open for a few minutes. Because here's the trick how to get more than just one of these firework displays into your shot. By opening the shutter and then holding a hat in front of the lens. And whenever a rocket goes up, some fireworks go up, you lift the hat away from the camera, and when it's done, put the hat back in front of it. And this way you can get 3, 4, 5 of those displays into one shot. You can also do this in post-production, by the way. You can also use something like Photoshop or Affinity Photo and other photo tools and kind of stack those on top of each other. So you would have two different photos, one with the fireworks in the left and one in the right, and put them into one photo. And it's a bit of cheating, but it will make for more impressive photo.
You don't have to tell anybody you did.
Well, and I would bet that a certain percentage of the fireworks displays and the fireworks photos that you find out there
do that, yeah,
are probably done that way. So that's it's pretty easy when you start doing it. It sounds daunting. So everyone who wants to listen to this again, I think you put this online so everyone can check back and try these things
but
out.
Those
next
are good
time
tips.
There's a firework.
Well, the nice thing about fireworks, at least in the U.S., is there's a fireworks display around the corner all the time. It seems like used to be it was just on the 4th of July. But now you go to a ballpark, you go to a county fair. Our local county fair has a fireworks display every night. So
by the way, it also helps to get there early so you can actually check out where the fireworks going up. So get there early just to get a bit of an idea where the fireworks going to rise into the sky. Because if you're in the wrong spot, that's another thing. If you do want to compose these, not just the fireworks, but maybe include some foreground elements, some landscapes, some buildings, some landmarks, that will certainly make this a more compelling picture.
The tripod's a very good tip. I think that's
important. Tripod or bean bag or something that lets you fix the camera. In a,
I have to say one of the advantages of digital photography is that you can always see, and I'm sad to say, I spent a lot of time at my fireworks, 4th of July fireworks, looking at the back of my camera. Did I get that one? No. So you can try, you can experiment. You get a better idea of what you're getting. You can at least see it right away. That's kind of nice. Imagine those poor pioneers who had to use film and wouldn't know what that image was going to look like for another week.
Well, I would argue they were probably the better photographers because they had to learn what they were doing.
Right.
And they had to be able to nail it on the spot without knowing what would come out. So
no second chance.
I think film photography makes you a bit more thorough in this, in this respect.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Chris Marquardt is our photographic guru. We follow him. He's our sensei. And you can find out more at his website, Discover the Top Floor. He does workshops. There's lots of images there. He's got a great book on film photography. Not too late to get that. And he's given us an assignment. And anybody could participate. You don't need a, like I said, you don't need a fancy camera. You can use your smartphone. What are we taking pictures of this month?
The current assignment is slow.
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 Sorrow.
Whatever that might mean to you.
Very slow. Yeah, whatever that word or concept means, illustrate it with your picture. Now, what do you do with that picture? Well, you can upload one a week to our Tech Guy group. It's on Flickr. So Flickr's a great, if you're interested in getting to be a better photographer, Flickr's a great resource because you can post pictures there, ask for comments. It's a lot of activity, a lot of photo sharing. It's free, too, so FLICKR.com. The Tech Guy group, you'll know you're there when you see there's like thousands, 10,000-plus members, lots of photos. Renee Silverman, our moderator, tag your image with the word slow, put it up there, and in a couple of weeks, Chris will pick three photos to honor with the Chris Marquardt Prize of Excellence. Thanks, Chris. We'll see you next time.
Absolutely.
Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. More calls right after this. More people right after this. Thank you, Chris.
We need a medal.
Yeah, we need like a little or a plastic statuette or something. Yeah, the Chris Marquardt Prize of Excellence.
A badge.
A badge of excellence. All right. Bow.
I will be there next week with a probability of 99.9%.
Uh-oh.
But there's a very small one that I won't be there. If something goes wrong, if I get stuck on the road, I will let you know.
Where are you going?
Oh, just I'm holding a workshop, and I have to drive back home, and it's going to be a tight fit, but it will work.
Okay. Well, if not, we will survive.
If not, I will.
Don't drive too crazy.
Let you know. No, no. Of course not.
Watch out for this Pokemon on the road.
All right. What is this Pokemon
you're
talking
about? Well, you don't
have
it yet, unfortunately. Although, I guess iMore has an article on how you can play it anywhere in the world.
That's the new Ingress, isn't it?
It's the new Ingress, exactly.
Okay. All right.
Exactly. I'm a little disadvantaged because I've run out of Pokeballs. And that you don't want that to happen. That's a sad thing. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Talk to you again next week. Take care.
Brad in Lancaster, California, you're next. Hi, Brad. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Come on over to the phone, Brad. Brad in Lancaster, come on down.
Hello.
Hello, Brad.
Looking into buying a DVR, but I got a couple of questions about their capabilities. Can I burn stuff that's on the DVR to a DVD?
Depends on the DVR. Generally not. Which so are you getting your television from cable, from satellite, or
cable?
From the air? From cable. Okay. So in order to use a DVR with your cable system, you have to get one that is what we call cable card ready. Because most of the channels, if not all the channels on your cable system, are scrambled. So what you do is you get the box. A TiVo is perhaps the most common choice, but there are other companies that make these.
Right.
When you get, normally, see, the cable company, let me be honest with you. Their goal in life is to get you to rent their cable box, right? They don't want you to do a third-party cable box.
Yeah, that's what I got now, and I want something.
I don't blame you. Comcast touts their X1 system as the state-of-the-art in technology. It's the worst thing I've ever used. I hate it. So we replaced it with TiVos. Now, The only reason they let you do that is because the FCC has forced them to do that. They don't want to do it. So it may be an interesting challenge for you. What you'll be doing is buying the DVR and then going to your cable company and saying, I need a cable card. The DVR will tell you what kind. A TiVo needs what's called an M card. And now, my experience with the Comcast store, anyway, was it was pretty easy. I walked in. They were very nice. They said, good, here's your... But I've been told by many people that often they go, I don't know what that is. We don't have any. There might be one in the back. Disappear for hours. I mean, they're reluctant. They have to give you one, but you may have to, maybe hard to get one. Get it? You put it in the back, and you're going to go through some hoops to make that new cable box effectively your cable company's set-top box. It becomes a set-top box. It descrambles. It allows you to see the channels that you've paid for, not see the channels you haven't, all of that. TiVo's easily the best choice. I'm a little concerned because TiVo just got sold to a company called Rovi. And Rovi said, we don't have any interest in the hardware. So I'm a little concerned about that. What other what are you looking at? Other brands of DVRs?
The TiVo, I went out to start looking for them, and the TiVo basically looked like the best.
Oh, it's easily the best. It's fantastic. Here's the negative on TiVo. First of all, they're kind of expensive. Second, you have to pay for a monthly fee for a channel guide. They don't, you know, in order to see what's on and to use the TiVo like you do your set-top box, you have to pay them, I can't remember what it is, $15 or $19 a month. So just be aware of that. You can buy a lifetime subscription, and that's what I've done in the past, which essentially says for several hundred dollars, I'm not going to pay monthly. But it only applies to that particular TiVo. It's not transferable. And again, my concern is I don't know what the future of TiVo holds. It'd be really dumb to buy a lifetime subscription to TiVo and then Rovi puts them out of business in 3 months. So you're probably going to end up with the monthly subscription. Now, once you get a TiVo, it's nice because you can get the bolts and you can put them in other rooms. It's really flexible. It's easily the best user interface, so much superior to any cable company's DVR. I highly recommend them.
Can you add external hard drives to a TiVo? Or
You can. Because the TiVo hard drive format is not a traditional format. The drive has to be blessed, and unless they've added capabilities, I mean, maybe the chat room will know. I know we have a lot of devoted TiVo fans in the chat room, but as I remember, you can only use the internal drive, and of course you have a choice of size of internal drives. There's also a company.
I was looking at 3 terabytes.
That's plenty. Now here's the problem: it's difficult to get the shows off your drive. You know, I think a lot of people say, "Well, 3 terabytes, I'll record 100 shows," but anything I want to keep, I'll just put on a DVD. Not so easy. Okay, Mike B., who's our TiVo, resident TiVo expert in the chat room, says you can add external drives. So I take it back. You can add external drives. I guess what happens, you plug it in, the TiVo probably blesses that drive and says, okay, good, now it's part of my array of recording. 3 terabytes with a TiVo is a lot of content. That's what I have. I got the TiVo Rumio Pro, and I've never run out of room. One of the things TiVo does that's kind of cool is it does suggestions. So after a while, you thumbs up and thumbs down shows you like and dislike. It kind of learns your patterns, and it will start to record automatically using free space. So there's always something recorded on the TiVo, even stuff you didn't think about. It'll delete it as it needs the space. So it's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. Let me think. And there is a company, I was going to mention this, in Southern California that I love called Weak Knees. They sell TiVos with even larger hard drives. They're kind of the TiVo experts. WEAKNEES.com. So I'd take a look at them. They're actually not too far from you, actually. One of the best things about TiVo, and I don't know how they got this one through, but many shows you recorded have a skip mode that you just press one button, it jumps to the end of the commercial break. I tell you, there's no better way to watch The Voice. It makes it a very much shorter show, though. Instead of 3 hours, it's like an hour. But it's fast. You go, boom, right to the next segment. So I'm very happy with it. There are other DVRs. I don't, you know, I have no reason to think Roe v. won't keep them alive, except for that one statement: we're not interested in the hardware. I'm not sure what that means. I love the TiVo. And, you know, companies like Wheat and Ease will probably keep TiVos going for some time to come. It's that channel guide that's a question mark. I guess that's kind of an annuity for Roe v., so maybe they'll keep that. So if, you know, of all the choices you have, it seems to me the TiVo's easily the best choice out there. Highly recommended. And there's lots of help out there, too, for you. A lot of TiVo owners. And we'll see what Roe v. does. Is it Roe v.? Is that who it is? R-O-V-I? I think that's who bought them. They do, I don't know what they do. They do something with TV. They work with global leaders in media and entertainment. I know that much because it says it on the website. They help the world's leading brands maximize the value of digital content. I know that. But I'm not sure. I think they make apps. So maybe they're just a software. And maybe Roe v. will get rid of the episode. I don't know what will happen with TiVo. It's kind of up in the air. I was sad to hear they were sold because I just think they're so good. I should mention our sponsor, shouldn't I? And then we'll talk to Michael. He's in Fountain, Colorado. And he loves Windows 10 and wants to chastise me for my Windows 10 hatred. All right. I'll take my licking. We will come back. I guess I'll take my punishment after news at the top of the hour. Don't hang up, Michael. You're going to be able to spank me and tell me how great Windows 10 is in just a few minutes. Actually, I'll be honest with you. I mean, if you're going to use Windows, you're going to buy a new computer, absolutely get Windows 10. My only real complaint about Windows 10 was the way Microsoft forced it down people's throats who didn't want it. But as I told our caller a few minutes ago, it's a lot better than Vista. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Roe v. plans to discontinue in-house hardware production, says Awesome Andy, and focus primarily on licensing its technologies and the TiVo brand to third-party companies. See, that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound good. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, you know, all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. Please use Skype, and we'd love to have you on. We've got calls from all over the world because internet, right? The website is techguylabs.com. If you hear me recommend something or talk about something, it will all be linked there. It's a free website. There's no sign up. It's just techguylabs.com. We even have the phone number there, so you don't have to remember that. A link to the chat room if you'd like to be joining us in the behind-the-scenes chat, techguylabs.com. And the site is divided up into show by show, and then within each show, hour by hour, and then within each hour, call by call. So it's really easy to kind of drill down to the part you want. Or you can call us, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's what Michael did because he says, I'm all wrong. Hi, Michael. Hello. Uh-oh. Am I doing something wrong?
No, you're fine.
I am?
Yeah.
You think I'm good?
Yeah, you're fine.
Michael.
He's just not there.
Oh, maybe I said everything that needed to be said.
Maybe.
He, I think, wanted to call in to defend Windows 10. He says, the note you took, Kim, was, why do you feel Windows 10 and Microsoft
are... He just wanted to pick your brain on it, but he said it solved his problems.
Yeah. Look, absolutely get Windows 10. You know, I think this is the future of Windows. If you're going to continue to use Windows, use Windows 10. If you're buying a new computer, you'll get it. If it's been offered to you as an upgrade, as it will be eventually, Kim, on this Dell that you've never used, now that you're upgraded to Windows 8.1, you have to have Windows 7 or Windows 8.1. But if your computer is compatible, Microsoft will offer you an upgrade. But what's unfortunate is that it really was kind of sneaking the upgrade onto people's machines. Microsoft, a couple of months ago, made Windows 10 a recommended install in the Windows Update process. And lots of people with Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 had recommended installs automatic, recommended updates automatically turned on. So what would happen, and we've got so many people call to complain about this, is that we had a teacher, for instance, happily using Windows 7. She loved it. She had all her coursework ready to go. Gets up in the morning, ready to go to school. She sees that Windows 10 has been installed on her machine, and she gets a EULA, an end-user license agreement, long, 100-page document. Nobody reads. Microsoft says, do you agree? If you agree, you can use Windows 10. If you disagree, we're going to have to uninstall Windows 10 from your machine to put it back the way it was. A process, I should point out, that works most of the time, but not all the time. And I can imagine that not a few people have said, well, wait a minute, I don't want Windows 10. I have software or hardware that doesn't work with it, or for whatever reason, I don't want it. And that's your right. Saying no to the EULA. No, I don't want it. I don't accept that EULA. The machine now churns for a while and never gets back to the way it was. That would be basically Microsoft reaching its long arm out into your machine and breaking it. And there have been lawsuits. And will be more, I'm sure. But, on the other hand, in Microsoft's defense, Windows 10 is the new version, probably the final version of Windows. They've offered for a year a free upgrade. That upgrade ends July 29th. In just a couple of weeks, that'll be it. You won't be able to get that free upgrade anymore. Unless, as one of our callers, I think Ben pointed out, you use it with accessibility software. They plan to extend that offer indefinitely for people who use it with accessibility software. But most users will no longer get that option. So if you think you might want Windows 10, now would be a good time to either install it. Well, here's what I would recommend. Maybe you say, you know what? I don't want to lose the right to get Windows 10 for free, but I don't want to use it today. I like Windows 7. I'm nervous about the changes in Windows 10. Here's what you do. You accept the offer. Might be a good idea to back up your hard drive first. You know, make an image of it would be the best thing to do. And accept the offer. Churn, 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 Windows 10. Accept the EULA. Churn, churn, churn. Now you're running Windows 10. And then look at about this computer. You know, right-click on my computer and get the and see if it's upgraded. Actually, the easiest way to do that is Windows key R and type the words W-I-N-V-E-R, Winver. That'll tell you what version of Windows you're running. And if you're running Windows 10 and it says authorized, now you've done everything you need to have a permanent copy of Windows 10, permanently authorized, genuine copy of Windows 10 on that machine, including even if you want to erase the hard drive, even if you now go back to Windows 7 forever, even after July 29th, you have the right to put Windows 10 on it for free. So that's the way to lock in your Windows 10. And you could do that now if you want. I would do it if you think you might want Windows 10. Maybe not today, maybe not next week, next month, next year, but maybe someday. And Microsoft has said many times, and I have no reason not to believe them, this is the last version of Windows. We're not going to do Windows 11. This is it. What we plan to do is two or three times a year do updates. In fact, the first big update is coming out August 2nd. It's called the Anniversary Update. And that will be free to everybody who owns Windows 10s. And those updates, Microsoft has been very clear, will be free forever. That's it. You're done. You have Windows. You have the version of Windows. And you will forevermore. That's it. So it is worth doing that. Because now, remember, that's on this machine. Get a new machine, you can't transfer it. But if you get a new machine, it probably comes with Windows 10. I think Microsoft really wants to get out of the business of selling copies of Windows. That's really the message. They see their business elsewhere. Cloud services, software, that kind of thing. They don't see them. It's funny because we think of Microsoft as the Windows company. And for almost all of Microsoft's life, it's been we make money doing two things, selling Microsoft Office and Microsoft Windows. And we make a lot of money doing it. But the world has changed. Nobody really cares what operating system they're using anymore. Most of the computing we're done is not done locally on our computer, but in the cloud. It's with a browser, checking our email. The operating system doesn't matter as much. Cloud services are where Microsoft plans to make. They see themselves as, they say, a devices and services company. Devices, by the way, does not really mean computers. Devices means phones and tablets. And I guess computers, but it's not a big part of their business. When Windows was going to, I guess, be less and less a big part of their business. So they want you to go to Windows 10. You should go to Windows 10 unless you, you know, just don't like it for personal reasons. That's your right. Or it doesn't work with software that you need. Or it doesn't work with your hardware. But it would be a good idea to lock in that copy on this machine if you think you ever will want it. So that's what we're doing with Kim's machine. So Kim Schaffer brought in an old Dell laptop, which she hasn't used in a while. It had Windows 8 on it. So what we're doing is we're putting first thing I did is put Windows 8.1 on it because Windows 8 will not get the upgrade offer. Now that it's a Windows 8.1 machine, I think, Kim, you just sit and wait. Maybe there's a Windows update we could run. I don't know. I think mostly what you do is you just sit and wait. And eventually Microsoft's going to say, hey, congratulations, you know, you could use Windows 10. Now, if you don't get that in the next couple of days, there is a backup plan. And that's what Burke did. He downloaded a copy of Windows 10. Microsoft offers a copy of Windows 10 on its website. He downloaded that. And if, you know, comes to July 28th and you say, I'm getting nervous now, put that copy of Windows 10 on there. You can install that and upgrade. But just to reassure you, I don't hate Windows 10. And I think if you're buying a new computer, you should get Windows 10. I think Windows 10 is actually quite good. But I also respect your right not to do it, and I think Microsoft really did force this down people's throat inappropriately. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Alan's in West L.A. Hello, Alan. Leo Laporte here. Now I'm thinking it's me. Alan?
Oh, do you have the phones down? Is that the problem?
No.
No?
Are we having that problem again? That the phone was kind of messing up? Let me put Alan on hold. You could see if he's there.
Hi, Alan. Are you there?
Oh, don't. You're on mic. Let me see. Let's try another line. Richard in Youngstown, Ohio. Hi, Richard. Yeah, the way it's silent like that.
Something happened to the phones. I can't pick them up, but now they're not there.
Yeah. We need to have an engineer look at the phone system, if you don't mind. And you can close that door, if you would. If you're on the line, hang on the line. We're not going to give up on you just yet. And, Richard, I'm going to put you on hold as well, because I don't want to lose Richard. And we'll figure this out somehow. Don't ask me. I'm on the air right now. You might ask her. Because I can't really tell you the whole story, but the phone's not working, essentially. We might have another fiber splice issue. Can you hear? Can you talk to him?
Try Newt.
Try Newt? Let's see.
Line 5.
All right. Hi, Newt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There you go.
Hi, Leo.
Good. Maybe we just had a bunch of hang-ups. I don't know. What can I do for you, Newt?
Well, first of all, it's a real pleasure to talk to you. You're not you're almost as hard as Rush to get a hold of.
Well, especially when the phones don't work.
I'm about to be the proud owner of a brand new Apple TV system.
Oh, good.
And the reason for it is I sent it to my son as a Christmas present. And he lives in. He's about to send it back to me because it doesn't work so well up in Fortuna.
Ah,
which is not all that much different than Petaluma.
Well, why? What? It's an internet television device. Does he have internet?
He does have the internet, but that seems to be the problem. But because I live in Aliso Viejo, California.
It's not location-based. There are people using Apple TVs everywhere. It's just about whether you have internet that's good enough.
They don't seem to have internet that's good enough. Now, the city proper, the little walk-around town of Fortuna, works very, very nicely.
Well, let me ask you. What is happening? Is he able to – he turns it on and what happens? What goes wrong?
It seems like it's constantly going through a buffering situation.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem to me for him is that he gets a notification that he's almost used up all of his available data.
That has nothing to do. None of this has to do with the Apple TV. He doesn't have very good internet.
Exactly.
And more than that, he's got a capped internet. I'm wondering if he's using his cellular network. Anyway, what kind of internet do you have, Dad?
Well, I'm using the Cox Communications.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Right.
Yeah. If you have decent internet, you'll be fine. To watch high-definition television using an Apple TV or a Roku or any of these internet devices, you have to have sufficient internet. Usually that's about 5 megabits down pretty consistently. The fact that he's getting a bandwidth, running out of bandwidth, does he have satellite internet? Probably means he's not using something like Cox or a cable company. He's using something else.
No, he's using, I can't remember the name of the provider up there, you know, when I call up there and talk to the folks, whether it's HughesNet or AT&T, you know, they've got great programs for $45 to $65 bucks a month. But then you get 2 weeks into the month and they're saying, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's satellite.
Reached your limit.
Yeah. Satellite. So bandwidth caps are a terrible thing. And most internet service providers either, you know, landline based don't do them or have a very high bandwidth cap. Comcast just raised their bandwidth cap from 350 gigabytes to, I think, a terabyte a month, which is an awful lot. It mostly because they didn't want to get in trouble with the FCC. See, the truth is that bandwidth is not a problem. It's just a way to get more money out of you.
Is that right, really?
Yeah, in my opinion. They'll tell you, oh, man, these bandwidth hogs are killing us. You know, once you've built the infrastructure, the cost of the internet to you, the bits that you're getting as an internet service provider is low to nothing. Most of the time it's nothing because of peering arrangements. So the infrastructure is the cost, but that gets paid off pretty darn quick at these prices. So I don't buy it when they say, now it's a little different if you're a cellular internet provider, you know, on the cell network. That's a lot more expensive to do because you have to provide internet to each cell tower. You know, it's more difficult. But if you're a landline base, if you're a cable company or a phone company and you're doing bandwidth caps, that's, I think, not right.
Well,
anyway, what can I do for you? Are you worried about the Apple TV working or?
No, I'm looking forward to be the proud owner of it, but it just kind of negates my Christmas present to my.
I know, I feel bad. So is he using a wireless provider? Do you know a satellite provider? You know what he's living
satellite provider.
He's satellite, yeah. So yeah. Satellite also constrained, right? Because they have, you know, a limited number of transponders per users. They have bandwidth caps. They have something called a fair. What do they call it? Fair use agreements where, you know, you have to agree to not being a bandwidth hog. And those are legitimate because bits do cost them more because they're on a satellite. Yeah. So he should look into some landline based either from the phone company or the cable company. It's kind of a crime in this country. We invented the internet and we have not the worst internet in the world, but it's not the best. It's kind of in the middle. We pay a lot more for it than most other countries, too. Fair use policy, FUP, that's what they call it.
Yeah. He's outside of Fortuna, just 2 or 3 miles up on the side of a mountain. And I thought, boy, he would probably be able to get great internet service, but I've been, you know, people have recommended everything from, lay your own fiber optic cable to.
Does he not have the option of cable television or DSL from his phone company? Has he looked into those?
He's looked into that. Yeah. It's not an option where he lives.
Yeah, this is a real problem in all of rural America. A lot of areas, there's population's too spread out to make it economically effective to put in cable. So if they don't have a cable provider, then they're relying on the phone company. And the problem with DSL, which is the technology the phone company uses, you have to be pretty close, within a couple of miles of the main office. And
something like Ubiquiti would not be an option, I'm guessing.
No, it wouldn't help him because he needs an internet service provider. Now, what you will find is in some areas there are WISPs, wireless internet service providers, that provide microwave links and other, you know, kind of oddball technologies to get to their customers. But really, when you live in a rural area, sometimes you're stuck. 3G and LTE, the wireless systems provided by the cell companies, may end up being the saving grace there. You might check with the cell company if you can get good LTE and see if they offer home internet service. But yeah, this is a problem, I think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I think we got the phones working. You know what fixed it? A reboot. It's just like a computer. Actually, it is. I think most of the stuff that we use nowadays, whether it's phone systems, television sets, probably even microwave ovens, they're just computers. They're all just computers now. I haven't had to reboot a microwave oven yet. Alan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from West LA and have no desire to be in a verbal joust with you, Leo.
Yeah, because the guy who has the microphone usually wins those.
See, that very true. I would
never pick an argument with a guy who buys ink by the barrel. Isn't that what they used to say?
That's right. So I have an older Dell machine, the Dimension 9200, a 1.86 gigahertz machine, 4 gig memory. And Windows went ahead and updated itself. Since then, the image looks like it's kind of stretched out, elongated, kind of like a standard picture. You try to put it in a wide monitor.
Yeah.
Microsoft tried to help me. They even came on board and took over my computer.
And they couldn't fix it?
Dell couldn't do it. I tried to put loading new drivers. I've done everything. Just wondering if my machine is too old to use Windows 10.
No, that's weird. So it worked fine with Windows 7?
And even the opening screen looks like it's okay, but once it goes into the regular menu screen, everything looks like it's kind of stretched out.
That is bizarre. I understand what's happening, which is that so the screen has a native aspect ratio, a certain number of dots by a certain number of dots. That's the
right.
We call it native, pixel per pixel aspect ratio. And normally what Windows will do and the driver will do is it will map the screen. That's why Windows, computers can be a variety of different screens, not only sizes, but aspect ratios and shapes. They're 3x2 screens. Microsoft's own Surface is not a 16x9 screen, which is probably more common with other computers, but a 3x2 screen. But Windows shouldn't have any trouble. It should just automatically fit the native resolution of the screen. What's happening is your screen. Well, who makes the computer?
Dell.
That's right. You mentioned that. So you probably have a 16x9 screen, and for some reason, Windows thinks it's some other aspect ratio.
Okay.
And is stretching it.
Right.
So it thinks it's a 3x2 screen, and it's putting it up, and it's coming out weird.
Right.
My first suspicion would be the driver. But there is also, and this might even be easier to figure out, there's also a monitor driver, which is really a driver in name only. The monitor driver is really just a text file that describes the attributes, the refresh rate, the aspect ratio, and the dots.
Oh, okay.
And that monitor driver is probably what's messed up. Now, I don't remember, and I'll have to look at Windows 10. Remember in the old days in Windows, you could open the display control panel and you could choose other resolutions.
Right.
Now,
right.
I think...
And I tried that. I tried all that.
And it's not... That's not working.
No.
Can you choose another monitor driver?
I've tried. I went ahead and I even went online. There was some program I downloaded that seemed to be okay with PCMag that looks for different kind of drivers. No luck whatsoever.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? What is... how recent is the computer?
Oh, it's a Dimension Tone 9200, so I think it's a good what? 8, 7, 8, 9 years of age, so.
Dimension 9200. Is it a Core Duo processor? Do you remember?
Right. Core Duo processor, yeah.
So, and it's not, it doesn't have a dedicated video card. It's probably using the built-in Intel graphics.
Correct.
Boy, is that weird.
If I did a clean install of Windows 10, would that do the trick?
It should. This is not normal. It should not have a problem with this. This sometimes does happen when you do an install in place with an operating system. It's why I always say the best way to do it is a clean install. Something weird happened. It got the... You know, of course, if you think about it, as the Windows installer is running, what it does is it queries hardware. It goes, what do you got? What do you got? What's your aspect ratio? Right. And it must have at some point made a mistake. I don't even know if you need to do a clean install. Reinstall might be all. But a reinstall, I would bet you fix it. I would be shocked if it didn't.
Oh, a reinstall. Okay, let me try that and see what happens.
And then if not, a clean install.
And how do I get a clean install from Microsoft? Is given that I have Windows 7 Professional, do I need to?
You need to go and download. If you Google Windows 10 ISO, Microsoft has a media maker that you can run. They don't ask for any information because basically, if you're not licensed, it'll run as a trial version. So you just download that. You are licensed. In fact, now that Windows 10, make sure it is authorized. But when once you're running a Windows authorized version of Windows 10 on that hardware, you never again have to enter a serial number. It just knows. So you can download the ISO. Put it on a USB key if your old machine boots from a USB key. If not, you'll have to burn it onto a DVD and boot to it. And then do the clean install. It'll be an option where you wipe the hard drive and reinstall. And
let's go ahead and do
a repair first, okay? So as you go through the installer, there's an R. You press the R. There's a point where you can repair the drive. It'll say, oh, yes, you got Windows. What do you want to do? Repair, please. And it may be that it just goes through the hardware, queries it again, and says, yeah, I see this monitor. Let's use this driver. And it picks the right one this time. Because that's what's going on. Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you kindly.
Yeah, you get what's going on clearly. So it's just a question of messing with it till it does the right thing. It's a weird.
Always appreciate you, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. It's a weird problem, and obviously, if Microsoft and Dell were both baffled, it's not normal. You would think that if you called Microsoft and they couldn't fix it, and then you called Dell, the manufacturer, and they couldn't fix it, that's calling some random guy on the radio would probably not be a good idea. But here's why. Because most of the time nowadays, even at Microsoft, the tech is not really a computer wizard. In some places, like Apple, for instance, they really train their geniuses to the point where they really do kind of have some sense of what's going on and how to fix things. But a lot of the times, because support is so expensive, a lot of times when you're calling, what you're really getting is a customer service representative, not a tech support person. And all the customer service representative is doing is kind of the same thing you would do. They're going through a notebook, and they're asking questions. You can actually kind of hear it happen, going down a decision tree. Well, have you tried this? No. Okay, page 37. Well, have you tried this? No. Okay, page 72. And you can actually kind of hear them doing that. And it's much the same information you'd get if you went to the Microsoft knowledge base at support.microsoft.com. What's missing is intuition, experience, sense. When I call tech support, a lot of times what I'm really looking for is, have you heard this happening a lot? Are you already aware of this problem? Have you got this bug report? Because that's what you hope is that, oh, yeah. Yeah, you're the 43rd person that's called with this problem. It's very simple. You do this, this, and this. That's what you hope. But if you have a weird problem, which, you know, it's very unusual, which clearly this is, very rare, there's nowhere in the book that describes that. It's just too rare to have put a page in that notebook. And they, you know, they're a customer service rep. They're not a genius. They're not dumb, but I'm just saying they don't have years of experience fixing. They're not real IT types, right? So they don't have this kind of inner sense of, well, could be that, could be this. They just go by the notebook. So I always resist calling tech support, but if I do, the real reason you're calling is, has this been a common problem that you know a quick fix to? Because if it's not, if it's an unusual problem, you're still on your own, unfortunately. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. We got one last segment before we wrap things up for this Tech Eye episode. Don't forget the website is techeyelabs.com. That's where you get the answers to all the questions, all the information, link to the chat room and the phone number, all of that. And it's free. There's no sign up. I don't want your email address. You can keep that to yourself. It's just techeyelabs.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Our final segment right after this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Almost said the tech capon. That wouldn't have been right. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Ron in Los Angeles. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Leo. a third-time caller, and how do you neuter a rooster?
No, I don't ask. Ron and I are referring to the inter-show conversation. When you're in hold, one of the side benefits is you get to hear all the weird stuff that we talk about in between.
Well, I want to go have a salad anyway.
Yeah.
I've called you a few times, and my problem now, I've got on Windows Media Player several years ago, I downloaded a video from an RCA Little Wonder. I don't know if you know what that is
RCA
or not.
It's a little Wonder.
It's RCA Little Wonder. It's a little video player that took the place of, there was one very famous one that was out. It's been discontinued. But anyway, it worked fine. And I downloaded the files, which are AVI files, to my Dell computer. And they worked just swell. And this was probably 4 years ago.
Oh, this is kind of like, I remember these little cameras that the flip cam and stuff like
that. Yes, that's it. It's like that.
It's a little portable camcorder.
Little portable camcorder.
And it records you saying standard AVI files.
Standard AVI files.
Okay.
Yes. And it works fine. My audio, video, great. But I turned on the computer the other day, and it says Windows Media Player encountered a problem while playing the file.
Yeah.
And they all have little red X's.
Yeah. You're in codec hell.
Codec hell. That's my
favorite. Not Kodak. That's
a
different
thing.
How to
get out of codec hell.
CODEC. That's the software used to compress and decompress rich media files like video. And of course, you can't take uncompressed video and play it on a computer. It's just too big. You wouldn't want it. You couldn't store it. It's just too big. So all video, even high quality video, is compressed a little bit.
Sure.
AVI files typically compressed a lot, but an AVI doesn't tell you how it's compressed. That's just the wrapper around it, just like MOV, which is Apple's QuickTime wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
Or you sometimes see MKV files. There's a lot of different file formats, but that doesn't necessarily indicate what the codec is, the software used to compress it. And these weird proprietary devices like the RCA Small Wonder often use weird proprietary codecs.
Okay.
So, because what they kind of expect you to do is use their software or plug their camera into your TV and play back on the camera. So, here's my recommendation. It should work. I can't guarantee it will, but it works for, it's got more codecs than Carter has little liver pills.
10,000.
It's got 10,000 codecs. It's Video LAN Client, VLC.
Oh, I have that.
Try playing it with that. The reason is Windows Media Player has a limited set of codecs, and that it's telling you, I don't have the right codec. I can't understand this.
But it used to work fine, and now it doesn't. And I think what happened, somehow Windows 10, I found it downloaded.
Oh, they may have taken codecs out, you bet.
And so
maybe.
I said, I don't want Windows 10, a la Steve Gibson, and so I backed it out. I said,
maybe the codec is still gone.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of.
One of the things Windows 10 did is delete, for instance, Windows Media Center, which was the lean-back experience for watching TV on Windows.
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
And it deleted it. It just deleted it. They reached out. I mean, I think this is another thing that's just wrong. They reached their long hand of Microsoft into your computer and said, oh, you don't want this, and threw out software.
Precisely. I'm sure that's what happened, because it was after that occurrence that I see that it's all gone. And I have had...
Part of that, by the way, is that they have to license some and many codecs they have to pay for, like the MPEG codec, which is widely used.
Right.
You have to license that from MPEG LA. And it may be that Microsoft said, we don't want to pay this money anymore. So they just took it out.
Terrific.
But VLC, they're French. They don't care. We'll pay license. We don't have to pay no license. You just use it.
Yeah, of course.
That's of course.
Of course.
Well, this MPEG LA, what is this? I don't care. So I think that's kind of probably what happened. Is they just...
So if I go to VLC, which is...
Open it in VLC.
And how do I get the videos?
Well, you got to have the file somewhere, right?
Well, I don't know where. It says library playlists, and then in this case, video.
Yeah, you need to find it. It's somewhere. It's probably in the movies, my movies folder, but if not, just you have to find it. Because obviously...
Yeah,
but it's somewhere. It's like in the Windows Media Player folder. Yeah, I'm sure Microsoft puts that in the My Videos folder. I would look there.
Yeah. Okay. And then open VLC yeah. and then import them into VLC and see
yep.
if it works.
It should run fine. And if and you can export it from VLC, so you can convert it to a format that Windows will play if you want.
Okay.
And if not, then there's another French product. These Frenchies are great. Called Handbrake.
I have that.
Yeah, that converts to any format, so you can convert it to a format that Windows Media Player will understand.
That's great. That's great. One more question.
Sure.
Why does if Steve Gibbs? If you are saying Windows 10 is terrific, or you like it, okay? Why is Steve Gibson so opposed to it? I downloaded his Never 10, by the way.
I love Steve. So Steve and I just have somewhat differing worldviews.
Okay.
Not 100%, by the way. I don't disagree with Steve saying he still uses Windows XP.
Well, I have one, too. I have an XP sitting right next to me on an old Sony. It works great.
So some might say he's a little set in his ways. His objection to Windows 10 is that Microsoft puts a lot of telemetry software on there and sends information about how you use Windows back to the home office.
You said that, yeah.
You can turn it off.
Okay.
If you don't just do the default install, you can customize it. And you can turn a lot of that off. And really, some of it you need. If you want to use, for instance, the voice assistant Cortana, it has to send your audio back to Microsoft servers to analyze and spit out the answer. It just has to.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry about it. If you don't know what it is, you don't need it. If you want to know, for instance, what the weather is, and there is a weather app on Windows 10, it needs to know your location. And it has to send that location back to the servers at Microsoft, and then it sends the weather forecast.
I mean, this is like the NSA. What are they going to do?
Well, so this is where Steve and I differ a little in temperament. I feel like it's benign, and even if it weren't, what? What do they know? They know that I run this program and that program. I visit that website. The people you got to worry about would be a dictatorship, a totalitarian regime. If I lived in China, maybe I'd be more cautious.
Okay.
I'm not worried about Redmond.
Like the USA now.
Well, and that's, I think, why this... you raise an interesting point. Because of the NSA, because of Edward Snowden's revelations,
correct,
lots of people are concerned. And, of course, if you send something to a corporate entity in the United States, like Microsoft, the laws of the land, including the Patriot Act, mean that the government can get that information. So anything you sent to any private entity is available to the to law enforcement.
Correct.
Again, doesn't bother me. If it bothers you, that's something to consider.
Doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Nope. Don't live in terror land. It's okay.
Yeah, I don't want to let the terrorists win. Exactly. I don't want to. I think it's a mistake to cower in your bunker because of some bad guys. Yeah, they're bad guys.
And they're everywhere.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. But listen,
I think
should I download Windows 10? I'm just going to ask point blank. Do it, huh?
Yeah.
Just do it and okay.
But I use Google.
I use Google.
I don't care. I turn on all those features because I like all the stuff it knows about me and the stuff it gives me as a result. I like that.
Does it know your height, your weight, and everything?
Yes, I put all that stuff in.
That's terrific.
Google Fit. Google has an app called Google Fit. It'll match, it'll tell you how much calories you should have, how many miles you've walked. It asks you your height, your weight, your age. I give it that. I don't give it my social security number, but I give it all that stuff.
You know, I use Google Scholar. I do a lot of legal research.
Wonderful. Isn't it wonderful? Is that not a great resource?
It's one of the best ever. And, you don't have to go to the law library anymore.
You know who's trying to shut that down? The publishers.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
They lost in court.
Texas and West and all those guys,
they charge for that stuff. They lost in court. The judge said that the interests of society outweigh the interests of the copyright holders in this case. Because they're not publishing whole books, they're scanning whole books, but they're using that information to provide services like Google Scholar and snippets, and that in this case, it's fair use. The judge has held that. It's done. The court case is over, but the publishers tried to shut it down.
Still trying.
Yeah, I'm sure they're still trying. I'm sure they'll never get it.
Yeah, well, I hope they lose.
You know what's a real crime? A lot of scientific research in this country, which is paid for by federal funds, is the information is held in private databases that you have to pay to access.
Okay.
And I think that's a crime because there's valuable scientific information that we paid for with our tax dollars, but somebody else is getting rich on by doling it out in academic databases.
Leo, the game is fixed, and that's the bottom line.
It's true. It's great to talk to you. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Ron.
Nice.
All right, take care.
I'll have a salad. Bye.
I'm going to go eat my salad and forget about all this eyes in the sky and the clouds and the cameras and the people listening and my Amazon Alexa and my Siri who just woke up, and I'm just going to enjoy life. Hey, thanks to Nathan Staten, our musical director, to Kim Schaffer answering the phones. It was kind of crazy today. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We really appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.